with pure joy over the difficulties that life throws at us. Well, I want to begin by looking first at the purpose of trials in our life. We all understand, I think, that there are trials that are God allowed in our life. And God doesn't stop these things from happening. And so why does He allow them in the first place? What's the purpose? Well, why do students take tests? An impending test is designed to push any given student to learn the material, to master the material. That's why tests are given. Tests are given because if you didn't have that test scheduled for Friday, you would just gloss through the material and you wouldn't remember it. Hopefully, by having to pass a grade test, you will have acquired and digested the material that you'll have with you for at least a period of time. School tests are not designed to discourage or to destroy a student. They're designed to make that student a better student, to bring them to the next level of education. Look at what athletes go through. We're watching all the television programming from Russia now as the Winter Olympics are about to take place. And many of those are being interviewed that have been training now on the ski slopes and on the ice. And look at what they have gone through in order to prepare themselves for that few moments of fame there in the competition. Each of those long, exhausting workouts and the strict diets and the training and all the concentration has gone in so that they will hone their skills, not so they'll be destroyed. So these tests and trials are a blessing and a benefit in the end. For the Christian, trials can be viewed in the very same way. And there are several things that are accomplished by trials. First of all, trials are a blessing because often a trial can turn us around when we need to be turned around. Unlike the people in Jeremiah's time who refused to be turned from their sinful ways, even though God sent trials, He tried to help them realize they were going down a wrong road, and He put obstacles before them, but they continued just to smash through those obstacles and go on their merry way. Jeremiah wrote in chapter 5 and verse 3, "O Lord, You struck them, but they felt no pain. You crushed them, but they refused correction. They made their faces harder than stone and refused to repent." There are times when God will put an obstacle in front of us for our own good, and He'll create a difficulty to slow us down or to rechannel us in a different direction. And I know that there are those of you here who have parents for which you thank God. And I look back and thank God for things that my parents did for me who were wise enough and loving enough to put corrective barriers before me and to bring about punishment for me in order to help me move in a different direction. It's like that story of the little bird who built a nest in the brush pile. And the farmer came along and saw the nest in there and just pulled the nest out and scattered it all over. And the little bird was so distressed and went about rebuilding the nest. And again, it was there a day or two later. The farmer came by and saw the nest rebuilt. Again, pulled it out and scattered all the twigs. And the poor little bird tried a third time to build the nest there in the brush pile. And again, the farmer came along, pulled the nest out, scattered it. And finally, the little bird went elsewhere. That little bird could never have known that the farmer's intent was to burn the brush pile. And we can't always know that God is doing something because we are about to be in the fire. And so God frustrates our plans in order to spare us the loss of life or even worse, the loss of soul. The Hebrew writer in chapter 12, verse 11 said, "No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. So, I don't know. There may be some trial that you faced in your life, and maybe in retrospect you can see more clearly that there have been trials in your life that have been put there or allowed there by God in order to help direct you in a better way in life. There's another real value and way that we can appreciate what James is saying about trials. Trials, almost always, for the Christian, will create a greater dependency upon God. We have an English ivy vine that grows in the backyard, and it's a pretty spindly little vine, but it'll grow up our trees, and that little vine attaches itself in a remarkable way to the tree, and it sends out little suckers that go right onto the bark. And that vine is so frail on its own that any windstorm could just blow it hither and thither. But when it's anchored onto that big tree, up the bark of that tree, the strongest gale can blow, the coldest weather can come, and that vine is just as attached to that tree as the bark is. And for us as Christians, we're frail and we're weak, but when the storms blow and the winds come, if we can lean on God and attach ourselves to Him, we're attached to something that will withstand any storm. I've learned to pray differently, and I'm often called on to pray for people who are sick and who are facing very serious diseases. And I do that, and I try to honor requests. And I'm in the hospitals, and with Dwight in the hospitals, I pray for healing. But most importantly, I've learned to pray that through this illness or through this trial, that the person who's currently suffering will learn to depend more on God. That's really the true value of suffering. That's something we can take with us for all of eternity. Lord, help these people to grow in their dependence and their trust in You is my prayer. And then a third truth about trials that we can take with us is this. Trials can actually make us more useful to God. And there's a real blessing in that. Remember the three Hebrews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they went into the fiery furnace. They literally went through the fire for God. And the only thing that burned in that fire were the ropes that bound them. You know, we need to thank God because sometimes He removes the things that bind us through our sufferings. And we shouldn't let setbacks stymie us. There's that familiar passage in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, down in verse 7. And there Paul says, we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. We're hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. So back to the original question. How can we, in some way, begin to obey what James says here when he says to us, count it pure joy when you face trials? I hope that as we go through James that we're going to be serious about looking at the imperatives that are contained within this book. Because James is going to say later in this chapter, don't just be hearers, be doers of what's said in the Word. If I leave here this week and want to seriously do that, then how can I count my trials as pure joy? Well, to begin with, we can view our trials as something that will make us better, not worse. For a Christian who has their eyes on God and who is seeking the will of God, that will help us move in the right direction. You know, the same heat that melts butter hardens an egg. And there are people who react in very different ways to trials. There are people who become better, who have their eyes on God, and there are people who become bitter, who look only to themselves. And so for us, it's a matter of becoming better people through our trials. When the wind blows, we can respond like a kite does and rise on that wind rather than being destroyed by it. And we can begin to understand how God is viewing us in those trials, what His perspective is like. We want God to do a removal when a trial comes. If it's financial, we say, God, free me from this financial bondage. I want to be back on the right track. I want a good job. I want a good income. But God is not so much trying to seek the removal of the trial as He is to do an improval in our situation. At the Y, I used to go to the Y. I don't go there much anymore. Vicki still does. But I would see these guys out there, and you'd hear them upstairs, and they were and groaning and grunting and lifting, and they'd be soaked in sweat, and they looked miserable in the faces that they were making, and they looked in the mirror as they made these horrible grimaces lifting the weights, and then they would leave, and they would all say, great workout. I want to challenge you to begin to view your trials differently, like a weightlifter views a good workout, and ask yourself these questions. What good might this thing that seems so tragic and so awful, what good might this be working in my life? Is this in some way helping to correct me? Was I maybe going in the wrong direction? And maybe is God giving me a wake-up call to help me move in a direction that I need to begin moving in? Is this causing me to cling more closely to God? Is it driving me to Him? Is it making me more useful to God in some way? And if that's true, if you can say yes to any of those, that's reason for joy, for genuine joy, for pure joy. Almost always, trials are seen by us as setbacks. Well, we lost our home. Now we're going to have to start all over again. And we don't like to have to retrace the path that we've already covered. And we don't like setbacks. I lost my job, and all the financial goals we had for ourselves and the savings has all been depleted, and now we're going to have to start over again. And that's seen as a terrible setback. Or we've lost our health, and we're facing long-term disability or even death. And we think, what a horrible, tragic setback that is to the plans that we had laid out for our lives. But we need to remember, as Christians, our long-term goal is not our health. It's not financial security. It's none of these things. My long-term goal as a Christian is heaven. Now, if I look at my trials in terms of heaven, in terms of eternity, that can change everything. I'm amazed. There was a program on television just recently about Mount Everest, and that has just become a casual climb almost anymore, seemingly. That mountain that was insurmountable for so many years until Edmund Hillary climbed it is now packed with tourists all climbing Mount Everest every summer. But even as many as are climbing that mountain, it requires a number of setbacks in order to reach the peak. In order for a person or any group that wants to clear the summit of Everest, it requires 7 descents to get to the top. You go up to a base camp, and then you back off. And you go up to the second level, and you go back to base camp 1, because your lungs have got to expand in that rarefied air, and you've got to be prepared, and so that you climb it in stages. But there are 7 stages in which you're going the wrong direction. You're not going toward the summit, you're going back down toward the base. And yet those climbers have learned to view that as progress. Even when I'm moving the wrong direction, that's still progress, because that's what will get me ultimately to the top. And for us as Christians, we're going to face trials. We're going to face difficulties, but it's all part of God's design to get us to our ultimate destination in heaven. Don't confuse direction with your ultimate progress. Life will have setbacks, but that does not defeat us from our ultimate destination. You may have detours or setbacks or even what seems like a dead end, but James says, as Christians, count it pure joy because your ultimate destination is not found on this earth, but in heaven alone. So, tonight I want to issue you a challenge or a homework assignment or whatever you call it, and it's simply this. This week, whatever it is that is your greatest struggle, and there's not a single person here tonight that does not have some area in which they struggle. You know what it is. This week, see if you can't look at it from a different perspective and look at it maybe the way God is looking at it. And in one of these ways that we've outlined tonight, see if there's some way that you can possibly view your trial or your struggle or your difficulty, whatever it is, view it in the way James asks us to, as a joyful thing that is helping us in some way. And I want to challenge you to do more than that, to tell someone about it and talk to them about your trial and how you're trying to view that trial. And then most importantly, I want you to thank God for it. This will help us to draw closer to Him. And I'll begin next week by asking you how many of you were able to find joy in trials. And I hope that many of you can do that. In Hebrews 12, verse 2, of Jesus it said, "Who for the joy set before him endured the cross." How can the word joy be in the same sentence with the word cross? Jesus set an example for us that we will face our trials with joy. Tonight, I think it's appropriate because we are a group of people that have trials and struggles. It'd be a great night to pray for each other. So if any of you are here tonight and need prayer, this will be a great time. Of course, the invitation for the gospel is always open. But if you're here tonight and you need prayers, we would love to pray for you before we go home. If you need to come, we invite you to do that as we stand.